Let me introduce you to Nick Gillespie. Nick is the editor-in-chief of Reason.com. That's the online version of Reason Magazine, Free Minds and Free Markets. He also is the man behind Reason.tv, which puts up all sorts of cool video stuff, not just interviews, but also things like news items that they have that Drew Carey actually ends up getting involved in and narrating. And you do some very clever stuff there, Nick. Congratulations on that, and welcome to the show.
I thank you very much for having me and for complimenting me.
By the way, you used to be the editor-in-chief of the print magazine, and now you're only involved in the high-tech versions of that.
I have moved boldly into the future only 10 or 15 years after the intertubes, a series of tubes, have been created.
Yeah. Are you making money online? I mean, not
no.
You personally, but Reason.
Yes. No. We're. I mean, we are increasingly covering more costs, but bluntly, the magazine runs at a loss, the website runs at a loss, and the TV site runs at a loss. But things are looking better, generally speaking.
Hey, you could be Tribune.
That's right. That's right. Well, we're all of our sites, and we also have a think tank as well that are published by nonprofit group. So we have a different kind of economic structure than for-profit media. And, we're doing well. We're raising more money, and we're covering, we're also generating more revenue from all of our different platforms.
And more importantly, your content is terrific stuff. And let's talk.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Let's talk a little bit about the auto industry bailout.
Yes.
In Washington, the big three are still trying to get the White House and the Democrats in Congress to pass something that the Republicans don't want. Give me your viewpoint on what should be done here.
Well, first off, let's call it what it is. It's the big 2.5, because Chrysler is not a major car manufacturer in the same way that Ford and GM are. Beyond that, it is troubling to me that there are a number of Republicans, first and foremost George Bush and the members of his administration, as well as a lot of people in Congress who want to bail out the automakers. And it was a mistake to bail out the financial sector in the way that it was done, I think. There are also a lot of Democrats. There are a variety of options that are available for the automakers, including bankruptcy, including selling themselves off or being bought off. What is likely to happen, unfortunately, is that either Bush, who has talked about simply redirecting money from the TARP program, which is not legally slated for non-financial institutions, he's talking about kind of extra-constitutionally just giving a bailout to the auto manufacturers because they don't have enough votes in Congress, or under Obama or under a new plan with certain types of sweeteners that will probably win over recalcitrant Republicans, we will see something coming down that pike, most likely. And one of the main problems is that the United States taxpayers are probably going to end up covering a lot of the legacy costs, health care costs, and pension costs for the auto industry.
You said when you were referring to the financial bailout that there was something wrong with the way that it was done. Obviously, part of that is a complete lack of oversight, right?
Yeah, well, and first of all, the financial sector bailout was the kind of fiscal equivalent of the Patriot Act. You had Hank Paulson, the Treasury Secretary, come and publicly say to Congress and to the nation, if we don't pass this thing in 8 days, which is to say in a very short period of time where nobody seriously could have looked at the legislation and really read through it, much less pondered the consequences of something that is going to restructure the American financial industry, financial sector, for a generation at least to come. Anybody saying that it has to be passed within a week, otherwise there's going to be, like volcanoes will erupt and a huge gulf will open up and swallow the American economy.
Yeah.
It can't be taken seriously. And if that is our only option, you got to roll the dice with absolute cataclysm rather than saying we're going to lock in something, which then was immediately changed because the whole first iteration of the bailout was to buy up so-called toxic assets off of balance sheets. Then Paulson immediately said after it was passed, that's not quite right. What we're going to do is we're going to start buying preferred shares in companies and effectively nationalize the banking industry. And then he's flipped around since then. So it's not even clear what the financial sector bailout is. But the one thing that we know for sure is anytime the government says you have to do this, or else, you know, immediately without thinking about it. And you had people like Barney Frank and Michael Bloomberg and a variety of actors in this saying, we don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing or if this is the right thing to do, but damn it, we have to do something. Those are scary words, whether you're talking about civil liberties and law enforcement in the wake of terrorist attack or a supposed meltdown of the financial sector. It's just that is absolutely wrong. And then I would argue that what we actually did was mistaken. You don't fix a problem which supposedly was caused by easy money and by people spending willy-nilly and being feeling themselves immune to the risks of investing by giving them free money. It doesn't work. It compounds the problem. And once again, all we're doing is pushing the day of reckoning down the line a little bit, where our kids or our grandkids or us, if we're unlucky enough to live into old age, will be paying for this.
It does seem that we have rewarded people for bad acts.
Absolutely. And, you know, and this, it goes from the, you know, I have less sympathy for, you know, the CEOs of Citigroup and of Goldman Sachs, where Hank Paulson came from and where he'll likely go back to, than I do for line workers in Detroit or in Michigan or in the rotting, rusting industrial Midwest. And I have sympathy for homeowners who are strapped with mortgages. But there's also a component where, you know, nobody was forced to, you know, in terms of mortgage foreclosures and subprime, not even subprime mortgages necessarily, but people who couldn't keep up with their debt. Nobody was holding a gun to anybody's head to buy a house that they couldn't afford, to take on debt that they couldn't afford. And there is responsibility all the way around. The one thing that we know for sure, all the way through the system, from the very top to the very bottom, one of the things that I think everybody needs to recognize is that at some point we have to recalibrate the system and say you are responsible for your actions, and you cannot reward buying a house, investing in stock, you name it. These are risky ventures. There is an element of risk in that. You should take prudent risks, but if you just say you can do it and you can screw up and we're going to renegotiate your mortgage and we're going to give you all of the money that you lost, or we're going to buy the worst, riskiest assets that you own, this is a body blow to a system of rewards and incentives and risk that's at the very heart of the American economy. And we are absolutely playing with mercury. We're playing with fire here. I mean, it's a real problem.
It's the Big 550 KTRS. Paul Harris talking with Nick Gillespie, editor-in-chief of Reason.com and Reason.tv. Let's get back to the auto industry bailout for just a moment. We've got a lot of people who work at the GM plant in Wentzville, Missouri, and at the Chrysler plants in Fenton, Missouri, who are worrying every day about whether they're going to have jobs going forward into the new year. We already hear about plants being idled for a week or two or five in some cases. This is an industry that has tentacles reaching out to millions of Americans. Don't they deserve some sort of federal lifeline?
No, I don't think so. And there's a couple of reasons for that. First off, it is a myth you can slice up virtually any industry in the United States and say, you know what, this has far-reaching tentacles. People say that about housing. Typically, one of the reasons why we hear the numbers about housing starts reported is because if the housing industry is good, that means the economy is good. If the auto, you know, what's good for General Motors is good for the USA, was the old saying. You know, you could say that about print shops or about dry cleaners. Everything is interconnected. And when an industry is doing well, you know, that's a good thing for the industry and for the people affected by it. When it's not doing well, it isn't. But the fact is that the domestically owned auto industry, GM, Ford, Chrysler, need to go through major restructurings if they are going to remain viable at all, much less competitive with other foreign-owned companies. The fact is that the United Auto Workers did cut a deal last year. They changed their compensation structure, and they brought it more into line with what the industry standards are. What that means is that if you're a relatively new hire by the UAW, your job is probably pretty safe because you're actually making what the market will bear for that kind of work in a technologically advanced, innovative economy. If you're not, I mean, you're in trouble, but you've known that for a long time. And again, this is not to write people off or say, you know what, you were in buggy whip making at the end of the 19th century, so it's tough luck for you. There are things that the government can do at all levels, at the state level certainly, and at the federal level, to ease people's transitions. But there simply is not enough work to go around for employees who are at the gold plate level at GM or Ford or Chrysler. And that is, you know, that is just a brutal reality. What we can do is mitigate the effects of that, but you cannot allow an old industrial sector which has refused to move. And, you know, the unions, I think, bear some of the blame here. I think most of it is management. Most of it is people at the top of these companies. But you cannot use GM and Ford and Chrysler to hold the American economy hostage and to say that those of us who are not in these industries must forever pay for idiotic labor agreements that the Big Three signed or the Big 2.5 signed in, you know, starting in 1970, in 1980, in 1990.
So you don't worry about the impact on the economy on a national scale if one of these were to go into bankruptcy?
Let me put it this way. I worry about the human toll because, you know, we're in a period where for the past 15 years, basically, we've had unemployment levels that were, you know, 25 years ago, economists would have called a 6% or possibly even a 7% unemployment rate, what was called frictional unemployment, that this was just the natural kind of change and transition of people quitting jobs and moving to new jobs in a given year. We have been in a very, very humming economy. That is going to go away, at least for a while. We're going to see higher unemployment, and it's already almost up to 7%. And it will go higher. I worry about the human costs of that. It is incredibly dispiriting. It is very difficult to be unemployed or to be part of an industry that's in its sunset. The question, though, about the American economy is, do we try to lock into old-style things, which is something that Japan has done and has been, you know, basically moving sideways for about 15 years now, possibly more, or do we embrace what has always been good about the American economy, including the rise of automaking in the early part of the 20th century? And industries have to change, and they have to innovate, and they have to grow. And the fact is that the GM and Ford model is not working. It doesn't have a long-term future in a world where we are competing globally and where people want a wide range of cars, a wide range of trucks, and things like that. So I think we need to do things to help it make it easier for people who are on the short end of this stick, oftentimes through no fault of their own. But we also have to look forward to what kind of economy can we have where we have increasing standards of living, increasing jobs, increasing economic growth, which is what really drives quality of life.
But is the free market perspective fair, considering that many of these other car companies, the foreign ones like Toyota and Honda and Hyundai and Kia, are getting support from their own governments?
You know, but that is not a major factor within the United States. And for instance, the simple fact of the matter is that GM and Ford in the sectors of the car industry or the auto industry where they do well, in trucks and in vans and in SUVs, there are import quotas against that. That's one of the reasons why they dominate in those areas. And also because they have a longer design legacy. And strength in that because it's more of an American kind of predisposition or preference. So there's a lot of subsidies going around, and they are never a good idea. But to be quite honest, you wouldn't say, you take something like the sugar industry, domestic sugar industry in the United States is protected from any kind of international competition. That might help the sugar industry make money for the foreseeable future, but ultimately it is bad for an economy, even if sugar is being subsidized by other people. It's better for American consumers to get lower prices and for American companies to compete on the merits of their product, even if other companies, I think, overseas are subsidized or governments are subsidizing their exports.
Talking with Nick Gillespie of Reason.com and Reason.tv here on the Big 550 KTRS. Nick, 5 weeks from today, we will wake up to an America with a new president. As a libertarian, are you looking forward to the Obama administration?
Let me put it this way. My enthusiasm for the end of the Bush administration is greatly tempered by the imminence of the Obama administration. One of the things that I think is particularly awful about the Bush administration, and I'm a libertarian with a small L. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I'm not a liberal, and I'm not a conservative, which also means I think I am like in a club of about one or three people throughout the country. But The Bush administration has so vastly derailed America in so many ways, whether we're talking about, strange expanses of executive power, whether or not going to war promiscuously and then blowing an occupation, which could have gone a very different way, and most recently and most fundamentally by really derailing American capitalism. Bush was quoted by the Agence France-Presse, the AFP, the French version of the AP, yesterday, as saying, "I had to turn away from the free market enterprise system in order to save it. I had to throw it under the train." Essentially, he has put into motion a series of changes which Obama will take and run with, and they will be very, very negative for capitalism, for free enterprise, for the traditional kind of marketplace for goods and services and even ideas that are what has made America a great country. I worry a lot about the Obama administration, partly because we've had a series of stimulus packages already this year. Earlier this year, the Fed and the Treasury have been pumping money into the economy, which is going to lead eventually to inflation. But when Obama starts, it's going to be a redo of everything. He's already talking about a $1 trillion stimulus package. We are already on the hook, based on recent bailouts and loan guarantees and whatnot, for $8.4 trillion worth of stuff out there. We're going to get something. Obama is learning, and there's a great new video we did at Reason.tv about Obama's New Deal. He's being pressured by his advisors, and he's eating this up with a spoon, the idea of creating a new deal, of spending bazillions of dollars on infrastructure projects, whether they make sense or not. We're going to be pouring a lot more concrete and a lot more money down the rat hole, come January 20th.
Nick, I don't think you're in a small club of small L libertarians. I think there are a lot of people who have been frustrated by the extremes of both political parties who find themselves in the middle, not just here in the middle of the country geographically, yep, but in many other ways. And I will point many of them to Reason.com, the website, and Reason.tv, where you're doing all sorts of video content, for more of that as we roll into 2009. And it sounds like there won't be a dearth of material in the new year.
No, that's the one thing is the last 8 years have kept us busy, and certainly the next 4 years, and unfortunately, possibly the next 8 years will keep us just as busy. One of the questions I think that's always worth asking is whether or not are you more or less free to live how you want to live in America? And that's really kind of the yardstick that we try to use to say whether or not a political policy or developments or social developments are good or bad. And unfortunately, in many ways, we're freer than we ever have been. And there are also a vast array of forces coming out of traditional conservative and liberal groups, Republicans and Democrats, that really want to squelch that. They want to squelch what we can see on TV, what we can read on the Internet. They want to take away more and more of our tax money, or money as taxes, and then tell us how to spend it. And it's very troubling, but if you like to fight, for freedom, you're going to have your hands full for the foreseeable future.
Very well said, Nick. It's always a pleasure. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much.
Nick Gillespie, editor-in-chief of Reason.com and Reason.tv, and occasionally actually in print in the magazine called Reason. I'm Paul Harris, filling in for McGraw-Milhaven on the Big 550 KTRS.